Welcome to the Gerald Brooks Leadership Podcast, a deep dive into biblical leadership with pastor and author, Dr. Gerald Brooks.
Hi, this is Gerald Brooks. Thank you so much for joining me for the podcast. Right now, everybody's scrambling in ways that they've never scrambled before to try to put together life and to hold together organizations and begin to construct the future with so many unknowns and variables. Over the past several weeks, I've had a lot of conversations with leaders, spiritual leaders, secular leaders, leaders of large organizations, leaders of small organizations. I've also, in those conversations, made some observations, and the observations are just those things that are the takeaways from profound conversations with people that I love and people that maybe look to me for some level of leadership and at the same time are leading vast organizations. All that being said, if I could give you a couple of things that I think are important, and if there's ever a time that literally I am preaching to the choir, this is what I'm doing, because you're listening to this. One of the things that I've noticed is how many leaders have begun to back away from learning right now. If you go nationally, what we're finding is that people listening to podcasts has just decreased massively. Yet people are quarantined in their homes. People are isolated. They would seemingly have more time to do something. And yet at the same time, they're not in a position where podcasts and learning are a part of the process. If I could give you two things that I think are important right now from all my conversations, number one is this: invest in your vault. Invest in your vault, V-A-U-L-T, like a bank vault. See, one of the things that has aided me through the years is that I've always wanted to learn from the worst moments in life. I've always wanted to learn from leaders who led during the most difficult times. I've always wanted to dissect those moments where people's backs were against the wall. It seemed like uncertainty was the norm. It seemed like possibilities had gone away. And it's because of that that I have so much in my vault, V-A-U-L-T, that I have so much in it. And so when crisis happens, that vault opens up and all of a sudden, hey, remember when you read this book 20 years ago? Remember this story literally 10 years ago? Remember when you had this conversation? And all of a sudden, they start congealing together to offer understanding. And see, if leaders are going to manage the future, it's because they've invested in their vault. And so some of you, I would encourage you to reach out to friends and say, hey, how are you doing? How are you doing with your learning right now? Some of you, you need to reach out with team members and say, hey, this isn't the time that we get so active doing that we forget to learn. And then if I could say a second thing to you, not only do you need to invest in your vault, but if you're over an organization or a team in an organization, you need to invest in your leaders. Because right now, teams and organizations are asking more of their leaders than they've ever asked before. Whether it's calling, whether it's contacting, whether it's reaching out, whether it's planning, whether it's game planning, they're asking more. But if you do not invest in them, there is going to be a limited shelf life that those leaders will be able to perform. So if you're not doing Zoom teaching just for your leaders, I want to encourage and I want to recommend something. It's a book I wrote years ago. I picked it up the other day because I wanted to check a note. But when I picked it up, I thought, this is gold. This is so important. It's called Old Testament on Leadership, and it involves five different stories. The story of Daniel, the six temptations of leadership, how leaders are tempted, Jeremiah on surviving in tough ministry. Jeremiah was given this impossible job, this impossible task, but he survived. Samson on danger signs in leadership. And then Nehemiah leading in spite of distraction. How do you say no to the noise and stay on track. And then Jehoshaphat, 8 essential principles of crisis. Can I tell you, the Jehoshaphat piece is just worthwhile. If I were you, I would get that book. I would make it available to your leaders. And then what I would do is I would do a Zoom call. And I would do a Zoom call where I'm going to say, okay, we're going to dig into it. We're going to talk about the temptations that Daniel went through. We're going to talk about the danger signs that Samson experienced. We're going to go down to Jehoshaphat, and we are going to look at the 8 essential things you've got to know during crisis. And I would dig into it, and I would develop it. So I want to encourage you, if you could reach out to someone right now, there's more leaders leading, but they're leading without learning. And you can't lead long if you're not learning. Invest in your vault and invest in your leaders. Now, all that being said, that has nothing to do with today's lesson. I want to talk about leading when you are tired. Leading when you are tired. Now, here's the thing. Many of you have had to lead at a level that is unlike any level you've ever had to lead. Why? Because everything stopped, and then you had to start again, and then the information came in, and you're having to revamp every day based on new information, and you're not certain if that information is going to be valid information for a week. So how do you lead? How do you put in place plans? How do you do this? And if you've been doing it now since the middle of March, here's what's going on. You're beginning to get tired. So how do you lead when you're tired? Paul gives us a template for leading during these moments, for leading when exhaustion hits, leading when you're losing your breath, leading when you just don't think you have the capacity to keep leading. And he does it in 2 Corinthians chapter 4. And really, there's two verses that are sort of bookend verses that I want to read to you. And these bookend verses really set the context for what he is going to do as he delivers the content. So these two verses are going to be bookends to each other. They're going to set the context, but they're going to open up the content within. So in verse 1 of chapter 4, 2 Corinthians, it says, "Therefore, since we have this ministry, we have received mercy. Do not lose heart." Don't lose heart. You go down to verse 16, and it says, "Therefore, we do not lose heart." In the King James, that word heart there, where it says do not lose heart, it means do not faint. It means do not give up. It means do not quit. Do not stop. Somehow keep going. Now, he's talking in a leadership vein, and he's dealing with the reality that sometimes leaders hit those moments where they just say, man, I've given it my all. I've done everything I can. I don't have anything left. This is it. It's the best I can do. It's what I can do. And as a result of that, I just don't know what to do. And he says in there, he says, don't quit. Don't quit. Don't lose heart. Don't give up. Don't throw in the towel. Don't say it's over. Keep going. So he gives us these two contexts. Starting off, he says, don't lose heart. And then he goes on at the end and he says, don't lose heart. Don't quit. Don't give up. And within it, he gives us content. Now, to me, what's intriguing is his intro. "Therefore, seeing that we have this ministry." I love that phrase, this ministry, this ministry. So let me just take a moment and let's dig down into that. Let's talk about the challenges of ministry, the challenges of ministry. So I want to dig down. Now, biblically, the term ministry is a very precise and exact term. But what happens is we tend to individualize that term when it comes to us. Now, biblically, it's an exact term. It's a precise term. But we tend to individualize that. So let me give you an example. There's a phrase that's used in my domain of leadership, and it's a phrase that goes like this. Well, that's not my ministry. See, what we've done is we've taken a very exact term biblically and we've individualized it personally. And so we've taken the term ministry that has a whole connotation in Scripture, and now we've individualized it and we say, well, that's not my ministry. Now, when we say that, really, what are we saying? You have to understand there's a difference between the ministry you have and the gift you possess. I need you to think that through. There's a difference between the ministry you have and the gift that you possess. There's a difference. They're not synonymous. They are a part of the whole apple, but yet they are individual extremes of the apple. So here's the thing. We use that term that is very exact and precise. We individualize it by saying, that's not my ministry. So we use the term ministry to describe our giftedness, and the Bible uses the term ministry different. So let's just start this way and dig down. Giftedness and ministry are not synonymous. Why is this important? Because Paul's saying, seeing we have this ministry, faint not, don't give up. So giftedness and ministry are not synonymous. What does that mean? Let's take another layer. Giftedness is about your strength. Ministry is about the need of the people. Now I need you to get it. Giftedness is about your strength. Ministry is about the needs of the people. So when I say that's not my ministry, really what I'm saying is that's not where I feel gifted. See, in my life, the place that I am most gifted is in the teaching gift that I have. That is my strength. That is where I've got my A game. Dissecting, outlining, teaching, that is just like the easiest breath I ever take in a day. Sitting down and coming up with a thought, developing that thought into layers, taking those layers and putting them into best practices, and then communicating them, that is my strength. But ministry is about the need of the people. See, ministry is what wears most people out, not their gift. If all I had to do was teach, it doesn't matter what's going on around me, that's easy. It's when I have to use my gift and still minister. Now, here's what I need to say to some of you. Some of you are highly gifted. You're highly gifted. You're highly talented, way more gifted and talented than I am. But my vault is bigger than yours. I have more experience to draw from, more stories to draw from, more depth to draw from. I have a bigger vault than you. I have more in the bank than you have. Now, I say that to you because here's the thing. Some of you have built organizations based on your giftedness because you're talented in an area, but you've never had to sustain ministry. But here's what's happening. This crisis has occurred. The world has come to a stop. Our nation has come to a halt. Your community has had the wind sucked out of it. And do you know what is happening? The needs of the people are more obvious than they've ever been. And so for some of you, you're having to go from where you're very gifted, but what you have to do now is you have to minister. You have to be profound in ministry and meeting the needs of others. See, ministry is when you're feeling other people's needs. It's tangible. You feel it. If you are in spiritual organization, you're walking out, you're feeling those needs. It's tangible. See, here's the biblical illustration. Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 15. It says, seeing that we have a high priest. And it says that he has been touched with the feelings of our infirmities. What's happening right now is to have a great organization. It's not about your gift, what you're strong at. It's about your ability to meet the needs of people. And the needs that you are feeling are at a level you've never had to feel before, because you have people that feel like they're the next victim, they could die. You have old people who feel like something was designed to take them out and to take them out alone. You have people who have lost jobs. You have people who have lost income. You have people that have lost social connection. You are feeling the needs. And what wears people out isn't their giftedness where they're strong, but having to have prolonged periods of ministering to other people's needs. And what we know about this is you feel it. Because if Jesus was touched with the feelings of our infirmities, if you are a good leader, you're being touched right now. But it's not only that you're touched, but you're experiencing the emotions of the moment. And you're really living through Romans chapter 12 and verse 15. Rejoice with those that rejoice and weep with those who weep. You're dealing with the extreme emotions of people out there, and you're dealing with the depth of what those people are feeling. And for some of them, they got their stimulus check. They're really feeling good right now. Someone else, I didn't get my check. I don't know that I'm going to be able to make it. Someone got their PPP for their small business loan. Hey, we're going to be able to make it for another few weeks here. We've got 4 pay periods that we're going to be able to go through. We're going to make it. Hopefully this thing will sound, man, mine got stuck in the process. There's not enough money. What if I don't get it? Here's the thing. Your giftedness is where you feel natural. Ministry is where you give your heart. And for some of you, you're having to give your heart in levels you've never gone before. And what I want to say to you is this. Ministry is different than gift. It's different than your giftedness. And what Paul does is he doubles down on this. And what he says is this. He makes it clear, and he uses these words. Therefore, since we have this ministry, as we have received mercy. Ministry and mercy go together. M&M, ministry and mercy. See, to minister without blowing up on the inside when you're feeling all these needs, and they're needs that you've never had to feel, and the needs don't go away. It wasn't just one week. It wasn't like you're just doing a one-time event. It's needs, and everyone feels this needs. It's going to require mercy. The only way you will survive ministry is with God's mercy. And the only way you can do ministry is in God's mercy. So let's look at that. What we know about mercy is that mercy is grace in action. So grace would sort of be the noun, if I can use it that way, and mercy is the action. People who have grace show mercy. Wherever there's grace, mercy is demonstrated. It's only with the help of God that long-term ministry, where people are pulling upon your heart, can be sustained. See, this is what Paul was talking about when he learned this experience, and he said that God's grace is sufficient for me. See, some of you, you're tired, and yet you're in a house quarantined. So it's not physical tiredness. It's not mental tiredness, because a lot of you really haven't been avid learners during this, but you're feeling drained. And the reason you're feeling drained is your heart is being demanded of you, because you've got to give your heart to help their hearts. And when you're giving your heart to help their hearts, you need more heart. And that's where God's grace comes in, that grace is a noun, but it shows up that God is merciful to you. See, we're not the first ones that were given big jobs of ministry and needed God's grace so that His mercy could shine through us. Back in Zechariah chapter 4 in verses 6 and 7, and what we know is biblically this has to do with the rebuilding of the temple that had been totally destroyed, totally devastated. The intent was that the adversaries had planned that the temple would never be rebuilt, that it would never be there, that every stone was broken, every part of the building was devastated, it was strong. They literally pulled rocks away, they pulled them to great distances. But God spoke to a man named Zerubbabel, and He says, I want you to go back, and I want you to rebuild the temple. So get it, where there's total destruction, where it seems like there's no possibility that any can exist there. So we're talking about something devastating. It was central to the lives of Israel. Everyone's impacted, like right now. And what does God say? He says, I need to tell you something about this. He says, if you're going to do this job, it's not by might. You're not strong enough. It's not by power. Your organization's not good enough. But it's by the Spirit. See, some people, they're just personally strong. And they've been able to build ministry on their strength. And some people, they have power. They have an organization that's effective. And they've been able to build ministry based on the power of their effective organization. But every now and then you're thrown into an environment that your strength and your organizational power isn't enough. And because your strength and your organizational power isn't enough, you've got to rely on something else. So it's not by might nor by power, but by the Spirit. You've got to rely on the mercy of God, the grace of God. You've got to rely on the strength of God. You've got to go deeper inside you than you've ever gone before. And you've got to learn that ministry right now cannot happen from the outside in. It happens from the inside out. And some of you, you're young in ministry and you've always been able to rely on the fact that you're more talented and you're more gifted and your organization is better than everyone else's. But that's not enough right now. If you do not draw upon what's in the Spirit in you right now, you're not going to make it. Therefore, we having this ministry, we've received mercy. Faint not. But what does God tell Zerubbabel about? It's not by might nor by power, but by the Spirit. He says, where are you, O great mountain? He's talking about this debris field he's looking at. How am I going to take this debris field and turn it into a temple? He says, you'll bring forth the capstone, the cornerstone, the finished product with shouts of grace, grace to it. He says, you're not going to bring it forth because you're the most talented construction person. You have the most talented construction team. It's going to be because you rely on God's grace, and you're going to shout grace, and you're going to call upon the grace, and you're going to say, God, I need your grace right now, because without your grace, this thing's going to wear on me. It's going to take me out of the game. I'm not going to be able to handle it, because I need grace, because grace looks like mercy. And when I have the grace of God in me, it shows up on mercy around me, and I need the mercy of God. Let me put it to you this way. Until you're at your end, God can't begin. Until you're at your end, God can't begin. So what does Paul say? He says, don't faint. Don't faint. You have help from above. and some of you are tired, and I would just say to you, you need to truly reach out to God above. You're worn out. Your strength's not going to be man-made or self-made. It can only be God-made. Because the need around you of hurting people, of uncertain times, and not clarity on organizational next steps, they're going to draw every ounce of juice out of you, because ministry is about need. Gifts are about strength. And right now, this isn't a giftedness question. It is a ministry question. Will you rely on the strength of God in you to meet the needs of people around you? Therefore, we having this ministry, we've received mercy. If God doesn't help you, you can't do it. So until you're at your end, and some of you are reaching your end, your talent, your gift, your strength, your organization, now it's God. God has you right where he wants you. It's God. It's God or nothing. You know what's interesting to me is he starts off with that little paradox, and he says, therefore, we having this ministry. But then he takes it a step further. But we've renounced the hidden things of shame, not walking in the craftiness nor handling the word of God deceitfully, but by manifestation of the truth, commending ourselves to every man's conscience in the sight of God. There's a couple of things that stand out to me in that. First of all, during times of intense ministry is when people are watching you the most. People are watching you the most. Because he says, we commend ourselves to every man in the sight of God. People are watching you and God's watching you. We're going to find out what's really in you. But one of the things that he says that happens too often in crisis is that when a minister relies on his giftedness without God's mercy, where they're strong instead of the grace of God to minister, the first thing that comes under attack is your character. He says, we've renounced the hidden things of shame. We renounce them. So here's the thing that I need you to know. Right now, when you get tired, is when you can make a dumb decision. Now, I've put it this way. There aren't seven steps to dumb. You can get dumb real quick. There was an old minister who made this statement. Don't let a moment of stupidity rob you of years of faithfulness. And if I could plead with some of you, don't let dumb be your destiny. Because when you're tired and you're emotionally overwhelmed and the needs are great, that's when dumb happens. There aren't seven steps to dumb. There may be seven steps to wisdom and seven steps to prayer and seven steps to faith. I don't know that there are, but there may be. But there's only one step to dumb. You can get dumb real quick. And what I'd plead with you is, when you're tired and you feel like you've given everything and you have nothing else to give, don't do dumb. Figure out how to rely on the mercy of God. See, the reason most people don't last in ministry is not because they're not talented or gifted. It's because the character equation gets the best of them. We all know people who aren't in ministry today because of moral failure. So what I'm going to do, maybe over the next couple of podcasts, is walk you through the content of what to do when you're tired. This is the first one. I've set it up, but we're going to walk through this whole chapter and help you to see. If I could give you one thing, the Navy SEALs have a statement. It's called 60-40. Whenever your body tells you you can't take another step, you have 40% left. At 60%, your mind and body quit, but you have 40%, which means you have to be bigger on the inside, mercy. You have to rely more on the inside, grace, than the outside. That being said, I want to encourage you again to invest in your vault. Could I encourage you maybe to send this podcast to a friend and say, hey, you really need to listen to it? And I want to encourage you that in your organization, you need to invest in your vault, but you better invest in your leaders, because some of you have your leaders working at a level. And I would encourage you, Old Testament on Leadership. It's a great book. It would be a great Zoom representation. I'm doing Zoom leadership meetings with organizations at a level I've never done it before. Can I tell you, if you invest in leaders, you have a future. If you don't, when this is all over, you'll be looking around and say, we got through the crisis, but we're cratering. Why? You didn't invest in your leaders. Hey, thank you so much for joining me. Thank you for taking a few moments with me. Love you. Proud of you. Thank you for representing Christian values. Thank you for wherever you are in the world, for making heaven bigger and the kingdom of God better.
Thank you for listening to the Gerald Brooks Leadership Podcast. If you'd like more information on Dr. Brooks's books, audio, or speaking engagements, please go to GeraldBrooksMinistries.com.